I'm Julie Bullitt. I've been a family therapist for over 30 years.
I'm David Bullitt. I've been a divorce and family lawyer for more than 35 years.
Together, we have been married for more than 37 years.
In our professional practices, the two of us have been witnesses to individuals and families struggling with life's most difficult challenges. In this podcast, we will talk about the conversations we have had,
the conversations we should have had,
and those that every relationship needs to have in order to find success, happiness, and fulfillment.
This is Conversations for Couples,
the podcast. Welcome back to Conversations for Couples, the podcast.
Yes, and we're super excited that we have a guest on today.
We have a guest today, Sarah Neely, a psychotherapist and the clinical director of the LGBT Plus Counseling Collaborative. Welcome, Sarah.
Yay,
yes,
Sarah.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we're happy that you're here. Tell us a little bit about the office that you work at and a little bit about your practice.
Sure. Yeah. So the office I work at is in Arlington, Virginia, and we recently opened up as a group practice. I was in solo practice for a while and have now brought on other clinicians to join me. We really focus on being a group of queer identifying clinicians to work with queer clients and their families and allies. The goal of that being is allowing queer identifying clients to find clinicians who have similar lived experiences or backgrounds and can understand a bit of the more unique or different circumstances that queer couples, individuals, families find themselves in.
Yeah, and we definitely want to dive into. It's so intriguing. I'd love to hear as a clinician that works with, you know, all kinds of couples. I'd like to hear specifically, you know, what are unique issues that queer couples, you know, come into the office with or face more often than others?
Well, there certainly are all of the usual couple issues of communication and everything, just working with another person or people in making a relationship work, making different preferences work, compromise, all of those kinds of things, as well as outside influences, families, in-laws, those kinds of things that all have to certainly impact relationships, parenting, everything like that. I particularly specialize with mixed orientation relationships. And so what that means is a lot of the couples that I work with met and or married as cishet couples. And then since then, somebody has come out as a different sexuality or is in the process or considering starting the process of transitioning genders or has come out as non-binary or somewhere else on the gender spectrum. And so I work with a lot of couples who are navigating that transition of identity, of like we identified as a certain way before, and now as a couple we are different and we are going to be different and we are entering a new phase of this relationship. So that particular concept, you know, transitioning in a relationship with a partner can be really fraught. Sometimes it can go really smoothly and sometimes it can be really difficult. And of course, it also has the outside influences of family opinions and friend opinions and coworkers and things like that. So I work specifically a lot with that. So that tends to be a pretty unique situation.
Yeah. So did you have a question?
Yeah, I did. So put us in a hypothetical couple there and tell me a little bit about, you know, what issues does the non-transitioning partner, you know, have to sort of come to grips with in terms of, you know, what's going on with their partner?
Well, there can be a lot of things, right? For some people, it can be a smooth transition in that, you know, maybe they already identified as multisexual or bisexual or pansexual, and so they're pretty comfortable with their partner changing in any way, right? But also a lot of couples are maybe that one, the non-transitioning partner is completely straight. And so now has to figure out, like, does my sexual identity change? You know, am I going to change, you know, what I'm interested in? Am I still sexually and physically attracted to this person? If this person's body parts change, am I still interested? Am I feeling comfortable with the exposure of being in public with this person and being perceived differently than we were before? Am I comfortable with just those labels being put on us and what that means for that person as well? And then, you know, it can, there can be a million other things that have to go with it as well. Like there can be family influence and religion or, jobs and, people's careers and what that might mean for them. And still the stigma and perception, safety is a big aspect depending on where you live, but really everywhere, with all the laws becoming more and more fraught lately, that is a big part as well. Trying to decide if we, if they're not parents yet, if they want to be parents, how is that going to work? You know, are we going to, what do we need to do in advance to make sure we can be parents later, right? If the person is going to go on hormone replacement therapy, they'll need to, you know, depending on who the person is, they might need to save their sperm or do something different, something to prepare for having children later on. So there are a lot of factors that would impact the other partner.
Yeah, and I'm thinking really about like the whole identity issue that is, I work a lot with adoption and people that are adopted, and identity is a really big, you know, common area that people struggle with. And I'm thinking about how people, you know, are really changing their identity within the relationship and how that can be complicated. What would you say would be sort of like, you know, the top things, the top areas that couples that are experiencing differences and changes that you, you know, kind of like hone in on with them?
Oftentimes, I would say communication is a big one, right? Because anytime somebody is transitioning or coming out, it often involves a long process of them figuring it out themselves before they let the other person in on what they're experiencing or thinking, right? And so that can often lead to a feeling of betrayal or a feeling of like mistrust of like, you've been thinking this whole time and didn't tell me, right? Which is fair, because like, how do you let someone in on something that you don't even know how to describe yet? But for the other party in that relationship, it can feel sometimes blindsiding. It can feel like, what else aren't you telling me? And then depending on, you know, any other co-occurring mental health stuff going on, right, or how they handle that information, plenty of other stuff can be going on as well.
Yeah. Can I ask you a specific sort of off-topic question, which is, sure. I love to do that.
She's always off-topic.
I'm always off-topic. I mean, you know, David makes a you know, an outline and then I go off. Yeah. So there is a high proportion of trans folks that are also on the autism spectrum. Mm-hmm. And I've seen some research. I don't know, you know, your opinion on this, but I'd love to hear more about that. And we have worked with some couples that are on the autism spectrum. And I've definitely in my office as a, in private practice, there is a lot of difficulty with perspective taking and communication around that. So I'm just thinking about, my wheels are turning as we're talking. You know, if you've seen that in your office with couples and you, you know, how you've dealt with that.
Absolutely. There definitely is a very high percentage of neurodivergence in the queer community. So that is absolutely the case. And so that certainly does come into play with couples. Oftentimes, in those scenarios, you're usually dealing with both couples or somewhere on the both people in the couple, or in the relationship are somewhere on the neurodivergent spectrum. So it's about figuring out what communication means to one person versus the other, really pulling apart the content of what people are saying versus the emotions of what they're saying, and making sure people are hearing both of those things separately and holding space for them simultaneously. Like the conversation of finances came up in a couple I was working with yesterday, and obviously there's the conversation of the content of like, how do we handle finances logistically? But then there was also the conversation of what do finances mean in terms of, you know, stability and safety. And, you know, one person grew up with divorced parents who argued about finances all the time. And one person grew up in a family that wasn't divorced and didn't have that conversation. So totally different backgrounds emotionally of how they approach money. So it's often, you know, the same with any couple. It's just making sure people are slowing down and understanding, okay, what are you saying logistically, but also what are you saying emotionally? And let's hold space for both. And the same happens with neurotypical couples.
Yeah. And I'm also thinking about, you know, sort of the parent arena, because mm-hmm. I have seen couples that, you know, someone transitions to a different, you know, sex, and how kids, you know, have to work through that too, right? Like accepting yep. now that I have two dads or two moms, or, you know, what that might look like, or having a parent be, you know, be very different.
Yeah. I don't work with children, so I can't necessarily speak from the child side. From the parent side, I often am having conversations with couples on, like, you know, how do they talk to their kids about it? When do they talk to their kids about it? What are the rules around the conversation, right? Like, not, you know, making sure that their children aren't holding a secret for them, that kind of mm-hmm. stuff. But also making sure that their children have, like, the appropriate language, and that they're prepared for the fact that, like, if you go and, you know, go for Easter dinner with grandparents and your kid calls you by your new name and the grandparents don't know about it, you know, not to be upset at the kid, but to instead have already had that conversation with the grandparents, you know, instead of being accidentally outed by your child or something like that. Mm-hmm. So there can be a lot of conversations around making it not the child's responsibility at all, that information, as well as just education around what it means. And depending on the age of the child, also some education around the fact that some people aren't going to be super kind about it, and working with that.
So Sarah, let me just jump over to another sort of area that I'm interested to hear your input on. You know, we're in an election year, right? And so there's a lot in the news, and there's a lot of state legislatures. There's proposed federal legislation that's rolling back rights in this community, or attempting to. Without getting into the laws that are being passed or trying to be passed themselves, can you talk a little bit about how all of that impacts couples that you see in your practice?
Fear. Fear is the biggest one. People are very afraid. They do not feel safe. They are afraid that, you know, come November, they might not be safe here at all anymore. Their children might not be safe here at all. They might have to, you know, hide transitioning or change, you know, things around or move to other places. Or, you know, some people, I know several people who are waiting to decide whether or not to come out at work or things like that until after the election to see how things go, right? Because we're in the DC area, a lot of government jobs, things like that. So yeah, a lot of fear around that. People are just kind of going day by day and have bated breath and trying to figure out what to do.
Imagine that fear increases stress on a couple.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It definitely does. And if you have a couple where it is a mixed orientation, that also increases, like, it would be fair and possible and valid for one partner, the non-transitioning partner, to feel frustrated or resentment that, like, now they have to worry about all this stuff that they never had to worry about before, that they lose some of the privilege that they've always had. So that can come up between couples as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you see couples that come into your office that are dealing with, you know, transition issues specifically? Do you see a lot of couples just not make it through that?
I think it's, I don't have specific statistics, but I would say it's 50-50, same as any couple, mm-hmm. right? It's the same as the divorce rate for anyone. Like, things come up in life, and if you're with someone, you know, for a lifetime, big things come up, and you decide either we handle them together or we don't. And so that's kind of the same with this. It also, I think, really, really depends on external support and the community that they're in. I think that's a huge part of it as well.
But when one partner is thinking of or discussing or going through the transitioning that you mentioned before, let's assume for the purposes of just this discussion, this is a couple that's happy, whatever that means. They're getting along well, things are going well, they're comfortable in their life together, and then this issue comes up from one or the other partner. You know, I imagine that creates a lot of potential problems. I mean, the person who's not transitioning, it seems to me, would say, what are we doing? I mean, you know, things are going great. Why are you bringing this into the mix, right?
Yeah, Why are you rocking the boat?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So how, talk us through just, you know, a little bit, you know, how do you deal with that as from a professional perspective?
Well, certainly validating the non-transitioning partner, right? That, yeah, you thought things were going great. This is not expected. That feeling of being blindsided is completely fair and valid, and allowing space for that. And then at the same time, going deeper that, like, if something like this is coming up, it's been there the whole time. And it was being held back in some ways. And usually you can go back and there are usually conversations that have happened, right? Like, often the partner can feel blindsided, but then when they go back, they're like, oh, when you said that, that's what that meant. Or, oh, when I saw you wearing that, that's what that meant, right? Like, mm-hmm. It's things start to click into place. It's very rarely a situation of like, there were never any signs. Mm-hmm. I've not seen that before.
Right. Yeah. And I was really thinking about, you know, I've worked with couples before that one of them sort of comes out as, you know, bisexual during the marriage. And, mm-hmm. you know, maybe they dabbled in it a little bit earlier, but sort of it wasn't on the table. And then it comes out later. Mm-hmm. And all the ramifications of that, of now maybe being interested in, you know, bringing somebody else into the relationship, mm-hmm. or exploring that part of their sexuality.
Sure.
And do you see a lot of that where somebody sort of didn't really acknowledge it or talk about it, but now as they get older, they're like, I want to be happy and more true to myself.
Sure. Yeah. We definitely work with ethical non-monogamy, and polyamory and different types of couples and relationships, and polycules and everything like that. So it certainly does come up. And I think it's, there are, again, like, I don't have specific statistics, but there are plenty of people who come out but don't necessarily feel the desire or need to go out and experiment or explore that side of themselves, but just want to feel free talking about it and identifying as it. And then there are people who are like, oh, you know, I did miss an opportunity. I need to explore this for myself. As long as the couple is communicating, talking about it, making sure that they have a safe place where they're talking about what the boundaries are, what the limitations are, who wants to know what that looks like, safety aspects, you know, using protection, things like that to keep both partners safe. There are plenty of ways it can be done in a really healthy way.
Mm-hmm. So let me, again, we keep toggling around things, but I want to talk about how religion can bleed into conflict with your clients and with couples in this community.
Sure. One of the other areas I specialize in is religious trauma. That is a big area I work with.
And what does that mean first? When you say religious trauma, tell the folks what you're talking about.
It's a really broad category, and a lot of things can fall under that terminology. But generally speaking, it means any sort of trauma caused by experiences or relationships with the church, whatever church that means, whatever religion that means, usually an organized religion. And it often has a lot of elements of like high control, high power, high demand. And often happens younger childhood, but can certainly happen older, really changes. It ends up with a lot of complex trauma for people, changes how they look at the world, how they look at themselves, how they identify in general, what they believe is right, wrong, shame and judgment towards themselves, things like that. All of that can fall under the category of religious trauma. You know, we've certainly heard plenty of like, you know, sexual abuse and, you know, violence and all kinds of, you know, clearly traumatic things can happen in the church, but things like constant shaming and things like that can also fall under religious trauma as well. Being that the queer community often butts up against a lot of homophobia in religion, or not being accepted in religion, or, you know, going to extremes like, you know, conversion therapy and all kinds of awful things like that. A lot of queer people struggle with religious trauma, whether they currently identify as religious or not. It can be a big part of their backstory for sure.
I mean, I got to think that there's internally potential for a lot of conflict, right? If someone is raised, pick, you know, say Catholic, for example, mm-hmm. and And now they're living a lifestyle that's that maybe their parents or the church or their family or whomever else doesn't approve of. Obviously, they have their own internal issues to deal with, but I'm assuming that also comes out in the relationship perspective, from a relationship perspective as well.
Absolutely. It certainly comes out of those in-laws and family relationships and support, sometimes lack thereof, right? Sometimes it can be really beautiful and people are supportive, and other times, you know, you'll have family members who have to be estranged, either choose estrangement or you have to choose estrangement, or you have to find a way to put in really strict boundaries. Then when you bring kids into the mix, you have to be also thinking about boundaries around grandparents and things like that. Like if you transition and you used to identify as female and now you identify as male, and you know, the grandparents still call you mom instead of dad in front of your children, right? Like all of those are issues you have to deal with and figure out. So it involves a lot of boundary setting and also involves a lot of pain and grieving and losing relationships or losing relationships in the way that you had held on to them previously. So those can be really painful experiences.
Yeah. I wanted to sort of pivot because that's one of my specialties is to, you know, go off topic. But this is an off topic. I was very intrigued to see that you're not only a therapist, but you're also a writer. And we wanted to hear more about your writing. You write romance novels and tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I write romance novels for the last 10 years now. I guess I published in first published in 2013, so 11 years maybe. And I started off writing a lot of like straight romances, as that was how I identified at the time, or I wasn't out yet. And then nowadays I mostly write queer romances as I am more out. I love doing that. It's the creative side of me, explores that piece of me. It's a really great outlet for me. And it's also a way for me to explore, you know, my own queerness in that medium. And then on the topic of like families and things like that, I write under the name Sarah Robinson. So anyone can look me up, but yeah, my family is not supportive of my queerness. And so like when I publish or I'm on the news or I'm in an article, you know, my family sends a lot of Bible quotes to me via text and things like that. It can be really rough. So like, I have a lot of lived experience with those kinds of things that allow me to relate to clients, I think. From having that similar experience as well.
Sarah, do you see clients virtually as well as in person?
I do, yeah.
And if we want to have folks get a hold of you, what's the best way to reach you and where do we find you on the socials and all the rest of it?
Sure. Sarah Neely, LPC at gmail.com is my email. And our website is lgbtcounselingdmv.com. So anyone can reach us through there.
You have a great website, by the way. I went on and I love like all the colorful and it's just interactive. It was fun to go on.
Thanks. I did that myself.
Oh, good for you. You're very creative.
Thanks. Yeah. So anyone can reach us there. We have several clinicians on staff who are currently taking new clients. I am not taking new clients at the moment, but we have several clinicians who are.
And if someone wants to read one of your books, tell us again your pen name and where they can find them.
Yeah, they can go to booksbysarahrobinson.com.
All right.
Okay, great.
Terrific.
Yeah, we did a segment the other day on, you know, keeping relationships spicy. And one of the things that we talked about was story time and using either creating your own stories or using novels, reading them as a couple and how that can spice up your sex life.
Absolutely. Absolutely can.
Yeah. Well, Sarah, it's been a pleasure having you. Have a great day, folks. Look her up, Sarah Neely. Neally, and Sarah can be found right on Amazon under. Tell me one more time,
Sarah Robinson.
Sarah Robinson. We'll put all the links in our description of the event of the podcast.
And I want to thank you so much for reaching out and being willing to do the podcast. I think this is such a great topic and one that we need to talk more about. And I mean, I think we could do six more podcasts with you and dive deeper into all these great issues. But thank you so much for coming on. And we look forward to, you know, talking more.
Awesome. And as always, folks, you can find us at www.tatbullitts, the Bullets, on Facebook, on Instagram, on LinkedIn, on TikTok, and on YouTube at the Bullets. So have a great day, and we will see everyone next time
on Conversations for Couples.
That's a good job. I almost forgot about
the podcast.
Julie Bullitt is a professionally licensed clinical social worker and family therapist. David Bullitt is a divorce and family lawyer. Julie is not your therapist, and David is not your lawyer. This podcast is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only.